Blog Talk Radio.
The Man Cave.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
Shout even shy, singing words you cannot say. Cute little ditty. Yeah, welcome to the Man Cave, Friday night, the last Friday of every month, right? With me is co-host Steven 76. How are you, Steven?
Doing good. How you doing, Heather?
Hot in California today, but other than that, doing fine. Friday, the last Friday of the month. We take a break from poetry, so put the children to bed, and yeah. Now we're part of the allpoetry.com site. We're writers, poets. We are a group inside a team of voices. It is free to join. Find us in the groups. Almost every night of the week, we have a radio show. We call in, share our poetry, our talents, and critique each other best we can. Except for tonight. Tonight's the Man Cave, me and Steven. I guess Deborah's phone is sitting on the couch by itself. Thank you, Deb.
It's a lonely phone.
It is. It is a lonely phone. So what's going on in your part of the country that we should all know about? In California, it's a wreck out here. It's everything's a wreck. It's hard to believe I still live here. All my friends have packed up and moved out. I should have done that with them.
We're in the state that's round on the outside and high in the middle.
Iowa. Okay. Yeah.
The only thing I know of that I can think of is the erosion. There's lots of erosion. Kay and my favorite park to go to, a lot of it fell into the lake. So they're renovating it. Yeah.
Renovating the lake. Wow.
Yep, the lake is chewing up the park.
It's eating away at the edge. Yeah.
Yep.
Around here, it seems like the latitude in which certain critters live is changing, whether it's climate control, getting hotter, not enough water. I think that's what it is, mainly, not enough water. But everybody's screaming about new breakouts of different spiders they've never seen before and bugs.
Mm-hmm.
People on the farms are laughing at them. But it's just a
bug. Yeah.
It seems like everybody's screaming about different, we didn't have these kind of spiders. I don't know what this is. They take a picture of the spider and post it on a site, the neighborhood site. And what is this? It's a spider, man. So the bug exterminators are probably having a great, great time.
Poor spiders.
Some of this strange news. Check this out. 830-million-year-old crystal might contain life. We're going to open it. Okay. Nothing bad could happen there, right?
Right. Than every sci-fi movie I've ever seen.
I'm having an internet truck problem here, Stevens. If they shut my phone off for some damn reason, I can't call back. Carry on, my friend. Paid my bill. Keeps jumping. I can't stay on the site. Come on. Let's try it one more. No internet. Oh, boy. See, might have to reboot my phone, my friend. You're not the student, though, are you? Okay. Wow, I'm going to have to hang it. I need to log in. All right.
Maybe it's just a local thing.
It was doing it when I logged on before the show, and then it seemed to correct itself. Then I get a usage warning thing. My usage warning, I'll go do right now. I don't know. Be able to tell. But it wouldn't be the first time my account got messed up. I don't even know what that is. Yeah, I was just before I'm ready for baseball. I'm watching highlights in the World Series from the past years.
Yeah.
It's hard to beat highlights. The best
thing
You know, you understand why people think it's boring. Well, you know, that's the level of being a fan when you can watch pitch by pitch and it's all exciting. Somebody that's watching baseball. Well, how boring is that? Well, when you know the different pitches and the batter and the pitcher and the players, it can get a lot. But it's like people who didn't enjoy NASCAR racing. I had a number of friends. Well, their turn is left. Yeah, well, the earth is shaking. You know, come on. 200 and plus miles an hour. I think that qualifies for an exciting run. But it became bad. We figured out a lotto pool, like you do sell squares on a, like football, we sell number of squares.
Yeah.
We figured out how to do that on any given Sunday when NASCAR runs on the race. It gets a little involved. You end up picking what pick you get, and then those picks are already done by dice of which cars you'll be picking up, what drivers. But I had some friends get involved. It was a month later, they saw people getting paid. They got involved, and they were first in the bar, in the tavern, I should say, waiting to see the race. Go Glenn and Frank. Jeez. Been telling you for years.
I don't watch much racing. I used to get into Formula One, but I never really got too much into NASCAR.
Yeah, you know, there's two camps, open-wheeled and closed-wheeled racing. I'm closed-wheel fan, mainly because they can trade paint. That's exciting when they trade paint. Open-wheeled, Grand Prix, the Indy cars, they can't do that. They touch, they go flying.
Well, right, yeah. But I think that's what I liked about them, because they used to have the Cleveland Grand Prix here, and I used to go every year to it, and it was always cool. I always thought, you know, a car that can go so fast and is so light that it needs these fins to actually hold it on the ground, or else it's actually going to achieve flight. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, without the fins, the spoilers and such, that the aerodynamically sucks that car down to the ground. That's why they redid a lot of the old racetracks. They don't run at Richmond anymore, or a couple of the old NASCAR tracks, mainly because they were not aerodynamically safe at the speeds the drivers were racing at. I think you can get airborne in the right situation at about 120 miles an hour if you wanted to.
Right.
Just what's going to sustain your flight? The open wheel, the Indy cars and such, they also figure in the stickiness of those wheels. The surface of those wheels are liquefied. You do not touch. You won't see anybody touching those wheels at the surface when they pull into pit.
Yeah.
They say that you stuck your hand on it, you pull away hot tar. The aerodynamics of those cars to try to suck that. And that's what I think the Indy cars, the Grand Prix cars, are interesting to me, is that dirty air versus clean air. When you come up behind a guy, he can create all sorts of dirty air by going back and forth. And if you don't follow him, you're going to catch dirty air on both edges of your car, which can disrupt your aerodynamics. That's fascinating. So it's anything over about 210 miles an hour, you're at the mercy of the wind flow, whether that car ahead of you is making it or not. Clean air is harder to drive through. Dirty air, you when you're drafting. That's why when they get three wide on a NASCAR track, that middle lane can get awfully dirty real quick. With dirty air, you're getting all sorts of influxes from people jocking around in front of you. That to me tends to the talent of those drivers. Those guys are quite remarkable, able to do that without wrecking. I mean, you take 15 of my friends, put them in the car, go 120 miles an hour, we're going to wreck. Because nobody understands what you got to do. These guys are going 185, 200 miles an hour, trading paint. They're touching each other. My God.
Yeah. I actually, years ago, I actually had a video game for Grand Prix racing, and I experimented with those fins because, you know, you could adjust them, the angle, because you can achieve more speed with less wind resistance. And at one point, I did kind of angle them the wrong way, and I the game made me achieve flight up into the audience. So, yeah.
Well, it's nothing that any car that runs the bank tracks, which NASCAR is, except for the road races, there's nothing symmetric about the car. If you look at it head on, the aerodynamics on the right side is going to be totally different than the left side, being the left side is taking most drag. Yeah, it's a whole... When they started reaching 200 miles an hour, the whole philosophy of how to create your race car changed. I mean, they used to run the Dodge, they'd run the Dodge Roadrunner or the Charger. That was the car for the race, and they'd all have factory races. They get that souped up a little bit back in the day. They don't do that anymore. And it is, after every win, the cars are broken down one by one from all the way to every bolt, making sure somebody didn't cheat. Once in a while, they get caught. Can't do that. I remember not too many years ago, the drivers got together with NASCAR and said, something's got to be done. It's too dangerous out there. That's when they started resurfacing the tracks. And like Rockingham, they said coming out of 3 to 4, or is it 4 to coming out of turn 4, I think, coming around, he goes, you drop 3 stories in a short period of time. So if you're going to get airborne, that's where you're going to get airborne. And they're dangerous tracks. So in order to keep the love alive and keep the drivers alive, they retired some tracks. The other ones they totally rebuilt. Experimenting with different surfaces, that's interesting too. What kind of? It's like running horse race on grass or mud, or playing Wimbledon on clay. Surfaces, everything. What kind of tires you're going to run?
Right.
I guess you have to pick your tires. You got to pick your tires before the race.
Yeah.
Stick with them. If you only brought 5 sets, sorry, it's all you got, 5 sets.
Deb wanted me to ask you if you could see the studio.
I can try it. It is there again. Let me see. That's what was not letting me. Get to. Okay. Tell you in a minute, Ed.
I took the liberty of looking up, because I know you like to talk about what day it is.
Yeah. What day is it?
I saw some crazy ones today. Did you know it's National Hairstylist Mental Health Awareness Day?
Oh, the mental health of stylists. Well, who wants to go to an upset hairstylist?
Right, yeah.
That's bizarre.
Come out with no hair.
Yeah, lopsided. They were good, right? That's like, how much money do these ladies spend a month, a year on nails? And I said that quietly. Don't say that I'm complaining.
I know how much Kay spends. Zero.
Well, I always found that art. And I got into it a little bit to see what they go through and what they use and everything. They get pretty elaborate. They've got little decals. They got beads and all this stuff. And keep telling my roommate, I can do that. She doesn't believe me. Okay, you know what? I'm logged in. Let me see if I can get to the studio. Ba-bing. Huh. Yeah, it's like I chose it. Got your answer in a minute. Come on. I'm trying to get into the studio. It allowed me to log in, but I'm sitting here waiting to see if I can get into the actual studio, and it looks like it's letting me. I see. It's loading up. Way too slow, though it should be. Yes. Yes, I can. She can hear me. I can see this video. Let's see.
Let's see what else is there. There's a lot of stuff about sunscreen and suntans and stuff today for some reason. I don't think that May is usually that hot, but I mean, I guess down in California it is, but up here we're like 60 degrees, so I'm wondering why is it National Sunscreen Day or National Don't Fry Day or National Heat Awareness Day? It's all three of those today.
Hmm. Yeah,
but I guess
when
it's
I was
100
a kid. What's that?
I said, I guess if it's 100 degrees in California, I guess it makes sense.
It's when it's 110 that you have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the shade.
I often wonder, you know, they say it's, if you pay attention to that any time the McRib sandwich comes back, the government's hiding something. I don't know how true that is, but I've heard that.
Have you ever had that sandwich?
Yes. I think the first time that it ever came out years and years ago, I did. I have not tried it the last two or three cycles.
I think I had it the last time it came out, and I thought it was horrible. And that was the first time I ever had it. I did not like it anymore.
That's me. That's how long it took the doorbell to ring. That's me again, minutes ago. Maybe one more.
You know, the studio did that to us earlier in our show, actually, because Kay always gives her little spiel, and then she says, as Brad Hamilton in Fast Times at Ridgemont High says, learn it, live it, know it. And after she says that, I always hit the button so you hear Snicoli say, "All right, Hamilton." Well, it didn't work. And then later on, we're talking, and all of a sudden you hear him pop in.
All right, Hamilton. Gnarly ways of tasty babes. Yeah. Snicoli.
It actually happened at a good spot, too, where Kay just started talking about something really nice, and all of a sudden Snicoli pops in. All right, Hamilton.
Let's see. The Mac band. Oh, I just hit it. Should be playing. No. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 seconds.
That's a delay.
Like, I don't think that helps us. the Gonzo one. Gonzo, those things are great.
Oh, yeah.
2, 3, 4. Did we get in trouble by playing one? About 4 minutes long, mm-hmm. 5 minutes long.
I don't know.
Yeah, not being able to. We
have another great. I'm not gonna chance it.
I won't chance it. Is the goes wild? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. The crowd goes wild. 8. My crowd goes wild.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, just quit. Then.
The crowd will go wild.
Yeah, that's what I should have started. That's probably what I should have started talking. Well, the only day it is today, National Suntan. Is it suntan or sunscreen?
Sunscreen, it says. Sunscreen Day.
I remember working houses with no sunscreen, baby oil over it. We liked it that way. Yeah. Roofing a house in August. Thank you, Dad. Didn't kill me, made me stronger.
There you go. Yeah, I don't know when it happened, when I transitioned to hating the sun, but I'm not a big fan of the sun anymore.
Yeah, that's from working indoors. It was this time out there. I remember the first year I worked indoors at an office, and man, 105 was a whole different animal.
Yeah.
I could work 16 hours in it. I could work 16 hours in it. Not anymore. And I don't mean direct sun. You couldn't stay out in the direct sun. You know, seeking shade as much as possible. Hot was hot.
Yeah, there's something about the fish up here in Ohio. Once it gets over 85 degrees, they stop biting. They really don't. They don't bite. I don't know if they go all summer without eating. There you go.
That was a long time. And pausing. And pausing. Come on. Thank you. Jeez. So special effects is going to be a thing of the past. Yeah, I think they go to deeper water. I think the feed is down deeper, so they go deep. I know at the lakes in the summer up here, I used to fish Folsom Lake all the time. I knew it like the back of my hand, what level it's at and what month, what the top temperature was. I always use lead core, so you're gauging depth by how many colors you're letting out and your speed. And in the summertime, we're going, you know, 8.5, 9, 9.5 colors, which is basically about 45 feet deep, depending on how fast you're going. But wintertime, you know, your surface, you're up there 1.5, 2 colors. So, yeah, big difference. I think it's water temperature, the main thing.
Yeah,
and plus how much algae. I'm sorry?
I just say I know it's that way with the Lake Erie perch that's why there's only certain two times a year when you can really catch them, because other than that they're way out in the deep middle of the lake, and I don't even know if you have fishing lines long enough to get to them, but I just know it's like in the spring and then in the fall that's when it's best to hit the Lake Erie perch out there.
I know different colors too. The rainbow needlefish was the best thing to use any time of year, but the surface colors were the bikini, which was a white with orange, more oranges on it, and the deeper ones you'd go the albino with the space tape on it, which is completely white with a silver back or white with a pearl back, and the dark greens and blues. Use deep water more than surface. So colors were also a factor.
Yeah.
But, the first thing they do around here every year anymore is drain the lakes. Why are you draining the flipping lake?
Really?
So it's a man-made crisis.
It is very odd. And we have a lake that's right on the Pennsylvania border here called Pima-Tuning Lake. That's a man-made lake. It used to be a valley, and they filled it in with water. It kind of sucks sometimes because there was a vineyard. There were vineyards there. So if you're trolling for like walleye, you can snag on some of those grapevine fences that they had down there.
Oh. Yeah, we actually had for a number of years now, when they drained the lake, one of the old towns the Chinese would make, who actually built the Folsom Dam, would surface, and they'd make a big to-do about it. You know, can't go near the structure because it's historic landmark, I guess, so it has that status now, so you can't touch it, get near it. And what makes me mad is they won't allow you to use a metal detector anywhere along those shores.
I wonder why.
I don't know. There's a lot of shit dropped out of boats.
Yeah. That's interesting. That makes me wonder what would be down there at the bottom of Pymatuning Lake other than just, you know, those fences and stuff from the vineyards, if there's any, like structures like you were talking about, if there's any of those down there.
I'm sure there is. Yeah, the water's cold enough to stay for a long, long time.
Yeah. I just know there's some big fish down there, big fish that I've never caught.
Yeah, I used to see this old guy when I would take my boat out. And I'd go every weekend as much as I could. And this old guy was out there. He was in a camouflaged flat-bottom boat, and he was always out there, rain or shine. This dude was out there. So we got to where we'd pass each other now and then, and we'd wave. One day I got to talking to him about, you know, fishing on the lake. At the time that I stopped there, his wife was with him. We had a self-made canopy that he'd put up, and it was sort of cold and rainy. A little, you know, it wasn't windy at all, but, you know, it was cold. And we get to talking to him, and I say, I see you out here all the time, and I see you go to the deep water. When I'm heading up one of the forks, you're usually heading to the deep water. Is there something I'm missing? Because I don't hit nothing as deep as I can go without, you know, putting heavy weight on and going down to the bottom, which is about 400 something feet during the winter. And the wife goes, go ahead, tell him. What? And so he goes, okay, well, I was out here one day and I hooked this fish. And it pulled me around this lake for an hour and a half before I tried to muscle him in and lost him. And I said, oh, really? And he goes, yeah, the divers that check the blades on the turbines at the base of the dam say that every once in a while they'll be down there and they have minimal light, but they can still see the surface, that it'll all go black, like how an airplane, a low airplane goes over the top and you hit their shadow, the shadow hits you.
Yeah.
They'll turn around and look up and they'll see this huge animal, I mean this fish. Now the legend is that there's some landlocked white sturgeon still, because it's the American River that Folsom Lake dams up. And he swears, drags it. He swears that's what he hooked into. And that's what he goes every time he wants to hook it one more. He has to hook it one more time. He lives on that lake. I can't remember how many. I think he said it. I think at the time, it was like a couple of years ago, and that would have been, 30 years ago.
Well,
so I'm sure that the old man's fishing in heaven by now, but I can still hear the wife. Go ahead, tell him. Why you dragged me out here? He's got a tech. He's always heading to the deep waters. Huh? Good for you. That would be something, though. He goes, he was alone in his boat, and he hooked this thing. And he had snagged on the bottom. He goes, well, there's no way in hell I'm on the bottom. He didn't have any depth finder, but he knew it was deep. And he goes, when the thing started pulling me around, he goes, I knew there was something down there, that I had hooked something. You know, man, because there was nobody on there that he could, you know, no friends or anything to wave at to come over and help me, you know, witness this or something. But
yeah.
I wonder if you ever did hook into it again.
Huh. I just know the biggest fish I never caught was on Pymatuning Lake, and my dad was with me, so he was there. I hooked into something. They got some really big carp in that lake,
yeah.
And I'm assuming that's probably what it was because it stayed along the bottom while it was fighting me. Because at first I thought I had a snag too, the same thing, and my pole was doubled over completely. and I was trying to reel, and I couldn't reel, and it was moving the boat around on the anchor, and I think I fought that thing for close to a minute. And then
you
it
got
finally.
Big catfish out there? Because I know carp big cats out here will actually run to the top and jump. Big catfish will lay down on the bottom and.
Yeah, maybe. But I never hooked a carp that jumped over there. I don't know. Maybe they're different species. Either way, it ended up looping around the anchor line and breaking the line. So after a while, after, I don't know, about an hour and a half, I think, I was just reeling in the anchor instead of a fish after a little while. But I had something big on that line for a little bit.
Well, he's probably wrapping the line around your anchor line.
That's what he did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So what'd you learn? Pull that anchor up. Unpull it around. Tie his ass out. He was just as tired as you were pulling on that anchor.
Yeah. I couldn't feel my arms for a little while there. Make you think of that old show, River Monster, with Jeremy Wade, when he...
Yeah.
But he hooked that sturgeon, and he fought that thing for 6 hours.
Wow. How big was it?
It took like three people to hold it up, if I remember right. Three guys holding it up out of the water for everybody to see.
Wow.
But I think his biggest fight was when he hooked a river ray. I don't know where the hell he was, but it was a ray.
Yeah.
And once a ray gets onto the bottom, it kind of recreates a suction, and it's really difficult to get them up onto the bottom when they do that, and that's what caused them to have. I think he fought that thing for, I don't know, probably almost 12 hours.
Yeah, I remember seeing pictures of him with that. You got a whole village around there holding that thing up.
Yeah.
What a job, though, huh?
That's the perfect job for me. But I can remember that the one with the ray, because just as he got it to the surface and they were getting ready to put something underneath it, the line snapped and it swam away. And I think it was the first episode I ever had to hear him censoring Jeremy's mouth, because he just went off.
Well, you know, they say that with the deep sea fishing anymore, different species like the big blue tuna or the marlin, as long as you could reach down, and if you could touch the fish, that's considered a catch, and then you cut the line.
Yeah.
And the trophy on the wall, you go in and say, well, it weighed about this much, about that long. Captain verifies it, and then you get to pick on the wall what plastic one you want sent home. They don't do taxidermy on those big babies of yours. Yeah. Yeah, I think they were, we'd always go camping up here in the Crystal Basin, which is it's between Sacramento and Lake Tahoe. And it's called Desolation Valley. And this place creates its own weather systems. Big thunderheads during the first hot days of the year, you can see the thunderheads, and that's what usually sparks the lightning strikes and starts the forest fires, the brush fires. But we were up there at the lake we were camping at. They were poisoning. They were draining it and then poisoning some of the pools because it had been overtaken with carp. And and I guess the little bullheads. And they were, I don't remember them saying anything anything alien was introduced, which can damage a lake. But anyway, they were dropping the lakes. So there was only one campground that was open on the peninsula. And we were up there, and I remember having to carry that. We had to only take the 12-foot aluminum, and we had to hike that boat and the motor and the gas out down about a quarter mile down to the water edge. And I told Dad, I said, I want to get over to the dam where the cold water, it's the only cold water there would be. So he agreed. We beelined it over. We're the first bar that surfaced to where we parked the boat. My dad started fishing there. I said, I'm going to go up over on the slide there and see if I can get into the deep water. So I just got out of the sight of my dad. He couldn't see me. I couldn't see him. And I threw it out as far as I could, and I could feel the thing drop. So I gave it line and just let it sit there. And boom, this thing hit it. And I fought this German brown, the German brown, about 8 pounds. It was huge. I'm on this slide where I slid down on my butt to this rock. So I'm standing just big enough for my 2 feet, right? And now I've got this brown. I'm saying, I'm going to lose this thing. I'm trying to yell for my dad. He can't hear me. So the last ditch effort, I want him to suck. You know how you get a fish to suck some air? That takes the life out of him. Get his mouth up, he sucks some air. So that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Every time he gets close, she takes off. So the next time I get it up, I'm going to jam my hand down her throat and pull it up that way. Well, exactly what I did, not realizing that fish that big have teeth, big teeth. I jam my fingers down and it's like, and I grab this. Now I turn around. I'm on this shale embankment where, you know, you go 3 feet up, you slide back 2. So I ended up abandoning my pole and just, you know, crabbing with that thing in between my left hand, pulling this damn fish up. I run up where I can see my dad. I whistle. My dad looks at me, and I hold this monster fish up. So I can see him. I see my dad move so damn fast, man. Before I could secure the fish and rebait, my dad's there. Slid down his back to my rock. And so he placed that down as he can. He ends up hooking a 7-pound rainbow. I let him stay down there. I mean, let him fish. He hooked one. He got a 10-pound brown, a 7-pound rainbow. And he hooked this one that we didn't see. It just snapped his line. About the third time it ran, it just snapped his line. We found it floating the next morning. It was about, we weighed it. It was over 12 pounds. German brown.
Wow.
Beautiful, beautiful markings and everything. But we went, I think we came home, hiked up that hill up to the campground. And there are some guys that we had to walk through their camp to get to ours, and with the stringer. Now, this stringer had, let's see, a 7-pound rainbow, an 8-pound brown, a 10-pound brown. My dad got about a 5 or 6-pound rainbow. I think that was it, just 2 and 2. And then the third he lost. But you just see these old guys, boat fish. My Lord, I didn't know. I've been down here for 40 years. I've never seen fish like that. You know, so they took pictures. And we didn't have any cameras at the time. I had just been in my accident. It was the first time that I could get outside. So my dad knew that we'd always go fishing. Then my mom wanted to go, and my wife went and had a freaking blast cutting those things up into steaks. Those are the fish, one of the best memories I had.
Yeah.
Nobody else catching nothing. And it was a strange lake. It was a strange lake. You had to put the night crawler and then put a little salmon egg at the end. You didn't have that salmon egg at the end, don't bother throwing it out there.
Really?
Did it idiosyncrasies, you know. But yeah, I miss my boat, my dad. Not in that order, but
yeah.
Certain things.
Yeah, I miss my dad and my dad's boat. We used to go out and spend hours out in the middle of Lake Erie. Go so far out you couldn't see land anywhere.
Really?
It was It was always a blast.
That scared the shit out of me. You couldn't see land. What the fuck? Damn ocean, man. Yeah, you know, if it's so big, the curvature of the earth hides the land. It's a big body of water.
Yeah. So that's where we go and troll for walleye, way out in the middle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What kind of depth are you on the middle?
I honestly can't remember. I know Lake Erie is actually the shallowest of the Great Lakes. Let me look it up.
But I mean, you're not cruising just above the bottom. You're just a certain level they're cruising at or feeding at.
Yeah.
I remember we always had to look and figure out where,
kind of figure out where they were depth-wise, and then we'd set the dipsy divers out to the planer boards and just cruise along, listening to some oldies and having some fun.
Yeah. Now, I remember when I got my Lowrance fish finder, we were looking for the cloud. You look for clouds of feeder fish, and usually around these big clouds, which is a bait ball in the ocean, either usually below it or behind it, you'll see the shadows of the bigger fish that are feeding off them. So I was always looking for the clouds, which were easy. They look like trees. Hard to tell when they were on the bottom whether it was a tree or not, but you see these big balls, big bait balls of feeder fish.
Yeah.
And they all depended on the coldness of the water.
Yeah. It says the average depth of Lake Erie is 62 feet, and its deepest point is 210 feet.
Is that right? Wow.
Yep.
That's not that deep.
Yep, that's why Lake Erie gets pretty angry pretty easily when the wind blows.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, you're like on the breakers of the ocean is where the land comes up shallowest. That's where the waves crack, you know, the waves are made.
Yeah.
The water is shoved up to the shallows. Wow. Now, do you have the ice phenomenon that, I don't know what lake it is, if Superior or what, where the ice just starts, because of the winds, it starts being pushed over to the shore, and then you get these mountains of ice being shoved into buildings and stuff?
I've never experienced that, but I've seen those videos. That's some pretty freaky stuff.
That is. You see, you say, I guess the sounds that it makes is just sort of eerie, too.
Yeah, it's almost like a jingling kind of thing. The way I heard it on the video I was watching it was really
yeah.
weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to tell you about the one time they actually held some sort of a national fishing tournament right in the town that I grew up in, where all these professional fishermen were coming to fish Lake Erie. And they all came in with their bass boats. And we were all kind of just watching them and laughing, saying they ain't going to make it, you know, a day on a bass boat on Lake Erie.
Yeah,
so they ended up, after the first day, they ended up asking locals to rent their boat to continue in the tournament.
Oh, will they get a deep V ocean, ocean going salt water? Yeah. Make some bucks. They used to have the fishing tournaments out here. They don't as much anymore. Bass tournaments. The lake that I lived before I moved where I'm at right now was a privately owned community, and it was Lake of the Pines was the community and the name of the lake. It was considered the third best fishery in California. So I did some studying on it, and it's basically bass, largemouth, smallmouth bass. And I've got videos. Maybe I'll send you a couple of these, the size bass. Huge girth on these babies. I mean, they were heavy. Also hooked up one that I thought was a bass, and I get it in, and I didn't even recognize it. It was a bluegill, but it had that knob on its head, and the blue on the gill was actually almost black.
Ah,
and so I was a little confused. Oh, man, this thing was over 4 pounds. It was dinner plate. Side. I've got pictures of it, and it shows me holding it up, and I said, "Your lucky day," and I threw it back. Then I went and looked. Somebody had said something on the video, because I had it on YouTube. Oh, yeah, you can go to my YouTube and see them. So I just looked at the state record. Somebody had mentioned how big, what's the state record for bluegill? State record is, I think, 395 or 375. So that thing was, I sent back the state record, still kicking. wouldn't want to kill it anyway.
Yeah.
So I did document it. The only thing I didn't have my electronic scale. So on the bigger fish, what I'd do is I'd run them up to the house, weigh it while I'm holding it, and then go back down and get it in the water, let it go, and then go out and see what my weight was that day, and then, you know, do the math.
Right.
And,
I
think I had a number of 7-8, one over 10 pounds, and I took the bluegill up there because I had another bass I was taking with me anyway to weigh. So I went up there and did it with, I didn't figure it would show, but it showed a 4-pound difference. It was heavy.
Wow.
This thing was quite large. I mean, dinner plate, that's exactly what it was. On the video, it shows that I lay it down on the planks, and the plank and the thing is, the dock is made out of 1x6, so it's 5.5 surfaced. They're pretty well put together, so you could tell how many inches from nose to tail, about how long it was, and it fought just as much as an 8-pound bass easily.
Yeah. Well, if you per weight, bluegill are pretty good fighters. I used to love catching those things when I was a kid. But I used to make my dad clean them.
Say that again.
I said I used to catch a huge bunch of bluegill, and then I'd make my dad clean them.
you got to skin those babies, right?
They're good eating, actually.
Yeah.
Bluegill is probably the sweetest fish that you could eat. It's even better than yellow perch.
Really? It's been a while since I've eaten any bluegill. Maybe because of the...
Same here.
Maybe because of the crappy or the crappy.
I was going to tell you that's probably... They're at that lake I was telling you about, the man-made one, the Pymatuning.
Yeah.
Every year, I don't know if they still do it or not, but every year they do a crappie-thon, and they would tag crappie and release them in the lake, and they tag them with different names, and if you caught the certain ones, you would win prizes, and it was almost like, they'd have a big poster, and there'd be pictures of crappie wearing, masks and stuff, like they're criminals and stuff, and you're supposed to go out there and catch them. And like the grand prize was like 10 grand, but like local bait shops would put like fishing gear, tackle, that kind of stuff, as some prizes. There's even one time, a bass boat one time was the grand prize if you caught the one crappie.
Okay.
But my dad and I never did.
Yeah. They had those out here. They would release all sorts of coho from the local farm, but they would mark them. Yeah. Like you said, they would tag them. And you could get anything from a new rod, reel. I think some of the radio stations were sponsoring their advertising for the trout derbies. And as much as I fished out there, I never did catch anything that had a tag on it. But you should tell the difference if you hooked if you caught a kokanee or the coho. Coho is white meat, and kokanee was landlocked salmon, so it was pink meat. And a lot of times you couldn't tell till you actually cleaned them.
Yeah.
And they're so much tastier. Let's see. Check the studio. Nobody's called in. Sure. We're not hurting anybody.
Yeah, about 6 minutes. We got to call it because Steven's got to get to bed, unfortunately, because I got to work tomorrow.
I do. We'll have to get together have a beer and go fishing. Check this
I'm
out. Check this out. I'm reading weird headlines. This dog looks like a old golden lab. Broke into this couple's house and went and snuggled into bed with them. Would that freak
friendly
you out?
Dog. That would.
All right, man. Well, I'm going to get back into the studio before you go. And so you want to give us a heads up what's happening at Poetic Slice of Life? Or is it Poetic Slice of Life? Slice of
yes.
Life.
Yes.
Yeah. Not
your tomorrow is Sky's show. Storyboards with S. Dark Holman. It's a special edition, volume 14, Walt Disney meets Star Wars. You do have to message her for a prompt to write to and check them out and geek out with Sky Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. And on Monday, we're doing our annual Memorial Day special at 7:30 p.m. Eastern.
All right. What's the prompt to the theme, your Memorial Day?
Just anything about, you know, thanking the vets or remembering, honoring.
All right. All right. I think I'm going to go out with the little Beach Boys. Come out to California. And if you do, go to Northern Cal, God's country. Now, if there's going to be a delay, let's see if there's a delay. I'm hitting the Beach Boys' Good Vibration song. See how long before it takes.
At least 8
seconds. Steven, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. 1 month from now, we this again.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
It's a long delay. Seriously.
Yeah. Come on, Brian. Brian and Carl and Mike. And who's the other cousin?
I don't remember. No.
Mike.
The last name was Love.
Mike.
That's Mike. That's Mike. Mike Love. Carl. And his brother. We'll just call him Lyle. We'll go Lyle Wolves.
There you go.
Big delays. Well, you don't have to hang around. If he doesn't start, I'm going to go and hang up anyway.
All right. Have a good one, Hatter.
Well,
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Tell the wind hi for me.
Will do. Good night.
Okay, man. All right. Good night. Okay, I'm waiting to see if this is going to start. I'm in the studio, circling. I don't remember the memo of the delay, but apparently we have one. Ah, didn't even introduce myself. Oh, I didn't. I'm Jay Hatter, poet from All Poetry, a team of voices, our group inside. It's free to join. If you want to share your work, go to allpoetry.com. It is free to join. Find us in the groups, a team of voices, ATOV. Knock on the door. Deborah, my partner, will, and my little sister will let you in. We have all sorts of fun. Yeah, well, that's not going to start. So let me scroll down a little bit here. Oh, Beatles. Saw her standing there. She looked at me.
Now, you promised. Now, those first three songs were dedicated to Johnny Carson, Randy Parr, and Earl Wilson. Now, in introducing the Beatles again, may I point out that they'll be on our show, as I told our audience, for the next two Sundays. Next Sunday from Deauville Hotel in the Miami Beach show, starring Hollywood's exciting Mitzi Gaynor. But ladies and gentlemen.
Come on, Ed.
Once again.
The Beatles. Yeah, the Beatles. I saw her standing there. She was just 17. Yeah, the words when asked, I think it was George when asked, if you weren't a Beatle, what would you think you'd be doing? Because probably your job. I'm Jay Hatter, another edition of The Man Cave. It's done. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you next time.